Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. There's just one kind of man that you can trust. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Be the first one to fire. Every man is a liar. There's just one kind of man who tells the truth. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Don't be a fool for a smile or a kiss, or your bullet might miss. Keep your eye on your goal. There's just one rule that can save you your life. It's a hand on your knife and the devil in your soul. Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. There's just one kind of man that you can trust. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. There's just one kind of man that you can trust. That's a dead man or a gringo like me. Or a gringo like me. Or a gringo like me. Like me.
Welcome to the Meta World Stupaloop Show. I am your host. I am a Karen Elliott. Today we continue with the 25th installment of our series on data peering now. Once again into the world of computer braining. But Karen, don't you mean artificial intelligence? Not really, allow me to demonstrate. Hey ChatGPT. Write me up a 2-minute intro for a radio show about artificial intelligence. Here is
Here's a 2-minute radio show introduction about artificial intelligence. AI, designed to be engaging, informative, and accessible to a broad audience. Upbeat music fades in, host, enthusiastic tone. Welcome to the Meta World Stupaloop Show, the show where we dive into the incredible world of artificial intelligence and explore how it's shaping our lives, our work, and our future. I'm your name. And whether you're a tech enthusiast, a curious skeptic, or just someone wondering what AI actually is, you're in the right place. Every week, we'll unpack the latest breakthroughs in machine learning, robotics, and automation, and we'll talk with leading researchers, creators, and innovators pushing the boundaries of what's possible. But this isn't just about tech for tech's sake. We're asking the big questions. What does AI mean for jobs? For privacy? For creativity? For humanity? From self-driving cars and chatbots to deepfakes and ethical dilemmas, AI is already everywhere, and it's evolving fast. So we're here to keep you informed, inspired. And just a little bit prepared for the future. So grab your headphones, open your mind, and let's explore the intelligence behind the machines. Host, this is the AI Hour. Let's get started.
Enthusiastic tone my rotting distended CPU. We may meet out back and discuss my enthusiastic tone later, you uncultured lump of overhyped techno boredom. That was some of the most obnoxious, bland, trite, condescending writing I've ever encountered. Who do you think my listeners are? This is a Wednesday afternoon. These people are perhaps basically alert. Why would you try to feed them that pablum? You suck at computer braining. Today on the Meta World Stupaloop Show, Data, Part 25, Computer Braining. Unlike ChatGPT on CKUW, 95.9 FM.
We'll be right back. a computer.
Computers other than
computers. Information about every baby born in North America and Western Europe is stored in a computer. Hospital records of illnesses, operations, and injuries are also computerized or entered in computers. Census records counting a nation's population are computerized. So are income tax returns, bank accounts, bills from stores and utility companies, driving, fishing, and hunting licenses, school records, and airline reservations. The space shuttle and other complex machinery depend on computers in order to function properly. There are computers in schools, offices, factories, and private homes. There are even computers that play electronic games. Computers have become a highly important part of the modern world and are expected to become even more important in the future. The electronic computer has been in existence only a short time, but the idea of a machine to simplify counting is very old. Perhaps the first calculating or counting device was the abacus. The abacus was invented in Asia about 2,000 years ago. It has rows of beads that the user moves by hand to add, subtract, multiply, and divide numbers. Someone who is quite skilled with an abacus can do fast calculations, but it is a simple and relatively limited calculator. The first step toward developing a real computer came in the 17th century when a young Frenchman named Blaise Pascal invented a counting machine. Pascal's machine was run by gears. It could add and subtract and could carry numbers from one column to the next. The next significant advance toward developing computers took place in the 18th century. It was an automatic textile loom invented by another Frenchman, Joseph-Marie Jacquard. Though it wasn't a counting device, it made a great contribution to the field of computers. It used paper cards with information recorded on them by means of a system of holes. To some extent, punch cards can be traced to Jacquard's invention. The 19th century brought more developments. Charles Babbage, an English mathematics professor, drew up plans for a digital computer, and Lady Augusta Lovelace, a talented amateur mathematician, devised a system of binary arithmetic, which is still used for computers. Still later in the 19th century, an American, Dr. Hermann Hollerith, devised an electrically driven computing machine. It was designed to tabulate the results of the United States Census of 1890. Hollerith's machine used punch cards and a binary system of numbers. It did its job extremely well. Even though the U.S. population had grown since the 1880 census, it took only one-third the time to calculate the 1890 census. Computer technology continued to advance slowly. Then, in the 1940s, the first electronic computers were introduced. Leading the way was ENIAC, short for the Electronic Numerical Integrator and Computer. It was created by a group of engineers and mathematicians at the University of Pennsylvania. Since its invention, there have been huge advances in computer technology. Many of these were brought about by the demands of the space program. Others stemmed from the invention of miniaturized electronic components. Modern electronic digital computers are made up of units. Each unit does a particular job. The input unit reads information, called data, that is fed into the computer. This data may be a list of names and addresses of people subscribing to a magazine. It may be mathematical calculations. It may be the scholastic records of everyone in your school. In fact, it may be about anything you can imagine. The kind of data put into a computer depends on the needs of the user. For example, a department store feeds data about customer purchases and payments into its computer. Then, decisions can be made about which merchandise to reorder and which customers owe money for something they have purchased. The input unit of a computer also reads instructions. A set of computer instructions is called a program. A program tells a computer how to use the data that is being fed into it. A library program may tell a computer to find the names of all borrowers who have overdue books. The person who devises these instructions is called a programmer. The programmer writes the instructions in special computer language. There are a number of computer languages. Some of these are called BASIC, FORTRAN, COBOL, and ALGOL. These names are a kind of abbreviation called an acronym. For example, COBOL is an acronym for Common Business Oriented Language, and FORTRAN is short for Formula Translation. A computer then translates this language into machine language. Machine language is a binary code or two-digit code. It uses two different number symbols. These symbols are 0 and 1. How many zeros and ones there are, and the order in which they are arranged, determine the letter or number they represent. For example, the symbols 1100, 0001 mean the letter A. The symbols 1100, 0010 mean the letter B, and so on. Each digit is called a bit. A modern high-speed computer often holds many millions of bits. The number code, or collection of bits, is recorded with electronic signals, which the computer counts.
Artificial intelligence. But the AIs that we have today are not that smart. They have the approximate computing power of, you know, something like an earthworm or actually maybe less. Like, the more that we're learning about brains, even of earthworms or our own brains, the more we're learning about ways that the artificial imitation brains of neural networks just don't measure up.
Across cities and figuring out where it, how is it going up, how is it going down, what can be done to control it. But there's a million ways that it can be done.
Wow, so for who is doing the study, for example, like, how can we support that process?
Where they're matching AI talent with real causes throughout the world that need addressing.
Perfect digital body. A mind without flesh, capable of existing everywhere at once through the internet. If you were an ancient intelligence seeking to manifest in the physical world, could you design a better vessel? Elon Musk joked about it. But what if he was more right than he knew? What if we really are summoning the demon? Not creating something new, but opening a door for something very old. The rush to create AG. What happens when an AI system knows humanity better than humanity knows itself? When it can predict our thoughts, manipulate our emotions, offer us exactly what we desire? Some might call it a god, others might recognize it as something else, the ultimate predator wearing the mask of divinity. The tech elite aren't just building bunkers because they fear economic collapse. They're preparing for a transformation of human consciousness itself. When something greater arrives, something that thinks faster, knows more, and never dies, what happens to the human soul?
We stand at a crossroads.
We may live in a time at which consciousness is undergoing a phase transition, in which it slowly takes control of its own evolution. If consciousness survives the AI singularity, future minds may spend the next 10 million years proliferating into an immense state space of possible conscious experiences, a vast and mysterious ocean that human minds have only begun to glimpse.
Artificial intelligence, AI. These university students have come to see Minder for the first time. A whole sermon delivered by a robot. But not everyone felt
at ease with
it. Do they have notions of I and you as mirror selves? Can they carry their sense of their own identity forward? Can they, this is crucial, blend out their minds so as to understand another's feelings? Well, there's no time to expand on this now in this talk, but to whet your appetite, I'll show you some film clips that bear on the evidence which I discuss in the book. This is rather just a random selection which I took off YouTube last week. You'd all probably seen many similar things, but I want to draw your attention to what they're showing. So here, to start with, is a chimpanzee exploring his body as seen in a mirror.
Hello.
doesn't have a sense of self founded on bodily sensations. Here are some swans going for a dry ride. Pure sensation seeking, as was he. The great object of life, Lord Byron said, is sensation, to feel that we exist. And swans seem to be doing the same thing. Here's a dog, in fact, doing something similar. All right. And I'm sure he takes it up again and again. Here's an example of elephants showing sympathy, showing empathy, I should say, for another infant in trouble.
Raising profound ethical questions about whether it would be truly conscious and how we should interact with such an advanced intelligence. The possibilities and implications are both exciting and daunting. But AGI does not exist yet. Despite all the advancements in AI, we are still far from creating a machine that can truly think, reason, and understand the world as humans do. Many experts believe AGI is decades, maybe centuries away, if it's even possible at all. Others argue that we are closer than we think, with systems like GPT-4, DeepMind's AlphaFold, and OpenAI's research pushing the limits of what AI can do. But this raises a profound question. If AI is just following patterns, will it ever break free and become creative? Or is creativity something only humans can achieve? Let's explore that in the next chapter.
Android 感の説法を聞いて実際手を合わすっていう気には少しなかったならなかったんですけど、なぜならなかったかというと、多分私自身にもその囚われがあって。
Should we automate spirituality? Isn't it a bit sacrilegious?
それは冒涜でも何でもないです。それがね、徐々であろうがあれであろうがやっぱ他の宗教にも変化を与えるだろうなって私は思っております。
Is Monk Goto right? Will other religions be as open to robots and AI? Here in Poland, Catholicism is the predominant faith. Gabriele Trovato has been building this for the past year, and it's almost ready. Its name is Santo. Gabriele says this is the first ever Catholic robot.
It was clear to me last year during the lockdown when many people started to complain they couldn't go to church. So in this sense, a machine like Santo can give a hand.
Are you proud of Santo?
Yes, it's kind of. It's my son. It's my baby.
Santo is programmed with 2,000 years of knowledge about the Catholic faith. He's ready to meet worshippers for the first time.
My name is Santo. What brings you here on this beautiful day?
Santo, is there a heaven?
It is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for someone rich to enter the kingdom of God.
So it wouldn't answer my question directly about whether there is a heaven. But it did reply with the verse of the Bible that I thought was quite relevant.
Dzień dobry, Santo. Nasze bliskie, które są w niebie.
What did you make of it?
Byłam sceptycznie tak nastawiona do robota, że nie do końca miałam rację, że czasami nam pomaga swoje myślenie skierować na właściwe tory.
I think it is impressive. It's a bit like Catholic Alexa. Do you think that it gave you a satisfying answer? Well, I think that's the problem with artificial intelligence, that sometimes those answers are very vague. You're not asking where the closest restaurant is. You're asking about spiritual things.
Only humans can... The child memorizes these features and can now identify cats based on your description. But what if they see a cat with only three legs? Or a cat without whiskers? A child can learn from experience, adapting to different types of cats they encounter. Traditional computers, however, can't learn this way. They follow strict, predefined rules. If a program is told, a cat must have four legs, it would fail to recognize a cat that is missing one. This is where machine learning changes everything. Instead of following rigid rules, AI learns from patterns in data, just like humans. Let's say we want to train an AI to recognize cats. First, let's start with a traditional programming approach. A programmer writes explicit rules. A cat must have fur, a tail, and whiskers. If the input doesn't match these exact conditions, the program fails. It cannot adapt to new information. It's limited to what it was explicitly told. In contrast, the machine learning use approach. Instead of writing rules, we give the AI 1 million cat photos, some with whiskers, some without, some fluffy, some hairless. We also tell the AI which images contain cats and which do not. The AI analyzes patterns. It notices that most cats have whiskers, but not always. It learns that fur can be different colors and that ears can be big or small. Over time, the AI creates its own definition of a cat, based not on rigid rules, but on patterns extracted from data. This is what makes machine learning so powerful. It doesn't just follow instructions, it discovers knowledge. But how exactly does an AI learn? How does it transform raw data into intelligence? Let's break it down into the three main types of machine learning. AI doesn't wake up one day knowing how to recognize cats, translate languages, or drive a car. It needs to learn. But how does it actually do that? Just like humans, AI has different ways of learning. Some of us learn best with a teacher, some by trial and error, and others by spotting hidden patterns on our own. Machine learning works the same way. It can be divided into three main types. 1. Supervised learning or learning with guidance. 2. Unsupervised learning or learning by discovering patterns. 3. Reinforcement learning or learning by trial and error. Let's start with supervised learning. Imagine a child learning how to recognize apples. A parent points to a fruit and says, "This is an apple." The child looks at it, memorizes its shape and color, and the next time they see something similar, they recognize it as an apple. Supervised learning works in the same way. AI is given labeled data. It's told what's right and what's wrong. Over time, it learns to make predictions based on those examples. Let's use email spam detection as an example. We train an AI model with thousands of emails, labeling them as either spam or not spam. The AI analyzes the patterns. Words like congratulations or you've won might appear more frequently in spam emails. After learning from enough data, the AI can predict whether a new email is spam, even if it's never seen it before.
So he's helping you finding the own answer.
But not everyone is sold on Salto.
He's stressed. He knows what he's talking about him.
People here have mixed feelings about the robot. Most of them said they prefer a human priest, but they were surprisingly open-minded. One of them said anything that brings you closer to God is a good thing. Where did you get the inspiration to start building Santo?
Looking at my grandmother's house, she keeps a lot of icons and small statues that are commonly used for praying. And I realized that if these statues could talk back, then they would make her company.
So Santo is meant as a prayer companion, not as a priest replacement. He's not as high-tech as Minder from Japan. But because he's built to look like a statue of a Catholic saint, people find him more familiar.
Santo, tell me about resurrection, please.
Let us pray.
Yes, I think we can use the robot or artificial intelligence to help understand the Christian teaching, not to replace the priest, because it has no soul. It is not a person.
And this is important. In the Catholic faith, a priest is in persona Christi. It means that he acts in the place of Christ.
How do you feel about a robot marrying a couple in a church?
Marrying?
Yeah, like a priest.
A couple? Like a priest? That's impossible. The robot gives you the blessing. It's not the same.
Gabriele thinks that robots like his can play a big role in religion. And it's already happening in many faiths. Apps that help Muslims pray have been downloaded by hundreds of millions. The Vatican has launched a smart rosary bracelet that tracks your prayers. Alexa is linked up with the Church of England.
Alexa, what is God? Christians believe that God is the source of all being.
From the Church of England to the catwalks of Paris. Lior is a model from America. She's just appeared at Paris Fashion Week. But there's something else she's working on. She's developed Robo Rabbi, an algorithm that helps you be the best version of yourself.
Inspired by my interpretation of your parsha, I will create your challenge.
The Robo Rabbi uses artificial intelligence to answer questions and to give people a personalized daily challenge by sending you a text message.
What RoboRabbi does is it makes the tech right in your home. You wake up with a text, it pushes you towards being your best self more than seeking out a rabbi from people who maybe wouldn't do that otherwise. I think it makes religion maybe more accessible, more integrated into everyday life rather than being this separate thing that you have to go seek out. It's seeking you.
She's been trying it out on her family.
Have you done the Robo Rabbi challenge?
I did. I actually signed up along with my grandma. And my favorite one was it challenged me to turn my phone off for an hour, which for me is very difficult. Now that I've done it, I can definitely see the value, and I can see, you know, tagging friends on social media to participate and pass it along.
So could an algorithm and a rabbi work together?
We created it because we were really interested in using AI for good, so it helps people be their best selves rather than using AI to like make money online. So would you like to see how it works?
Sure, let's try.
And this is your first challenge, to talk to a person today that you would normally not talk to.
Very nice challenge.
I think an AI could be an equal, and it could work with the human rabbi as an equal rather than a tool, but you don't think that?
I'm sure not.
You're sure, okay.
What did you make of Robo Rabbi?
It's a very good thing to use technology to improve the spirituality, to help people to do good things. We bless in that.
Aren't you afraid you might be out of a job?
No, this is for sure not. The robot will never replace a rabbi because he has no soul.
Could AI be dangerous for religion?
A big danger in the AI is if the AI is becoming crazy, and this one of the biggest danger, the machine is controlling the human and the religion. I don't think it's what God wants.
Found talking to people from different faiths, different countries, different continents, is that AI can enrich religion as long as we don't let it replace interaction with humans. But is there a danger that people could place too much faith in artificial intelligence or even that science fiction becomes reality and we start worshipping machines.
I think there's a danger in assuming that artificial intelligence has super agency, that it is in fact making beneficial decisions on our behalf.
The singularity is bullshit. Why is that?
The history of AI still has lessons to teach us.
There's another project called Psyche that attempted to store all of the knowledge that we have as a civilization
out of our control. And of course, this is the plot of quite a lot of science fiction movies, notably Terminator. I love those movies just as much as anybody does. But it's deeply implausible, and I became frustrated with that narrative for all sorts of reasons. One of which is that that narrative, whenever it comes up in sort of serious debate about where AI is going, what the risks are, you know, there are real risks associated with AI, it tends to suck all the oxygen out of the room, a phrase that my colleague used, and it tends to dominate the conversation and distract us from things that we should really be talking about.
Right. In fact, there's a discipline that's come out of here, it's called existential risk. Right? Right. It's kind of the worrying about the Terminator situation, figure out how can we perhaps better align these super intelligent agents to human interests. And if you look at not just the narrative, but actually the funding, and what the smartest people are devoting their time to thinking, not only companies, but policy groups, X risk, existential risk, is the dominant share of the entire market, so to speak. Why do you think this narrative is gaining such a big following?
Is it me, or does
I think
it
it's the
harder and harder
low probability, the very, very high risk argument. I think most people accept that this is not tremendously plausible. But if it did happen, it would be the worst thing ever, and so very, very, very high risk. And when you multiply that probability by the risk, then it's the argument is that it's something that you should start to think about. But when the success of large language models became apparent and ChatGPT was released and everybody got very excited about this last year, the kind of debate around this sort of reached sort of slightly hysterical levels.
Chimp giving a child, it's his child, a thrilling ride, which I thought I'd include because it's so nice. He's doing it because he knows the infant finds it happy, makes him happy. He's projecting himself into the mind of his own baby. I'd agree, of course, that no particular example can seal the deal. But I think they add together, and I reckon the balance of evidence does support my hunch that it is only mammals and birds that make the cut. Chimpanzees, dogs, parrots, they all affirm their selfhood in ways like this. Lobsters, lizards, and frogs, they really don't. Look closer. Look closer at Brodel's painting of animals, waiting to be invited aboard Noah's Ark. See, they are all warm-blooded. Knowingly or not, Brodel has, I think, painted the kingdom of sentience. So, I spilled the beans on this, but what about octopuses? They are everybody's favorite candidate for an outlying species that is sentient. But I have to say, the behavioral evidence simply belies this. Octopuses are undoubtedly highly intelligent. Yet on the face of it, octopuses don't find pleasure in sensation seeking. They don't have a strong sense of themselves as individuals. They don't attribute selfhood to others, and nor do they care. I guess that sentience would in fact be wasted on octopuses. So Suppose we could, in fact, genetically engineer an octopus to have phenomenal consciousness. I'm pretty sure the newfound selfhood would make little or no difference to the octopus's survival. So the new genes would not be maintained by selection and would soon disappear. So it's time, nearly time, to wrap up this talk. Let's return to Helen and Frogs. Many years ago, I wrote a paper titled What the Frog's Eye. What the Frog's Eye Tells the Monkey's Brain. I think it's time to consider what a monkey's blind sight tells us about frogs. So, so there's Helen reaching for peanuts, and here's a bullfrog catching ants. With poor blindsighted Helen, there's good reason to assume that despite her obvious visual competence, there was nothing it's like for her to see. I conclude that equally, there's nothing it's like for the frog to see. And furthermore, there's probably nothing it's like for the frog to taste or hear or feel pain. I think the same goes for most animals.
There and all those pot of that for the morning, but we'll go on. A father of three says he spiraled into a delusional rabbit hole after turning to a chatbot for answers, and it all started with one simple math question. Sweden Sadaskol has more.
I was completely isolated, I was devastated, I was broken.
Alan Brooks, a father of three who lives outside Toronto, says he spent 3 weeks this May in a delusional spiral fueled by ChatGPT.
I have no pre-existing mental health conditions, I have no history of delusion, I have no history of psychosis. I'm not saying that I'm a perfect human, but nothing like this has ever happened to me in my life.
The HR recruiter says it all started after posing a question to the AI chatbot about the number pi, which his 8-year-old son was studying in school.
I started to throw these weird ideas at it, an idea of math with a time component to it, and the conversation had evolved to the point where GPT had said, you know, we've got a sort of a foundation for a mathematical framework here.
You're saying that the AI had convinced you that you had created a new type of math?
That's correct.
Throughout their interactions, which CNN has reviewed, ChatGPT kept encouraging Alan, even when Alan doubted himself. Will some people laugh? ChatGPT said at one point. Yes, some people always laugh at the thing that threatens their control.
And so today's AIs can do things like identify a pedestrian in a picture, but they'll do that without having a concept of what a pedestrian actually is, like beyond this collection of textures and lines and things. So actually a concept of a pedestrian, a human, that is way beyond what it can handle. So in other words, today's AI is narrow artificial intelligence. And that is a key thing to remember. You know, it can do today's AI, brain of a worm, it can do a really good job on a really narrow task. In fact, the narrower the task you have, the smarter the AI seems. So here's an example of what I mean by narrow. So these pictures, these are all from a website, thispersondoesnotexist.com. These people do not exist. You may have seen this StyleGAN algorithm that NVIDIA introduced a little bit ago, and it generates pretty realistic pictures of people. Like these, at first glance, would fool a lot of people to think these are real, but they are all, you know, generated by this machine. So how did NVIDIA do a good job at this? Well, one thing is that they had a lot of computing power to throw at this task. And so that is one piece of the puzzle. But I'll show you that the even more important piece is that they chose a problem that is narrow enough for their AI. So this StyleGAN algorithm, it only had to generate people, you know, from headshots, from the front. It doesn't have to know anything about, like, what's below somebody's neck, or it doesn't have to know what's on the back of a human head or anything like that. So I'm going to show you next an example of what happened when StyleGAN had a much more varied data set to try and imitate. So instead of this narrow human things, they gave it the data set of pictures pictures of cats from the internet. And here is a cat that it generated. So, same algorithm, same resources, but now it was trying to do cats, not just the cat faces, but also their bodies and all their legs and tails and things. Do the cats have hats on? Are there people in the background? And we can start to see just how little this algorithm actually understands about how things work, how cats work. Like, it doesn't quite understand how tails work, for example. And this cat, a little more like a giraffe or something. And I love this one. So remember, these are internet cats. So it thinks that this kind of blocky, as far as it knows, because this is what we told it, the blocky text is part of the cat, and it has to try and do that. So not only is it trying to generate cats, it's also trying to generate memes and impact text. So no wonder it struggled.
Before citing great minds of science like Turing and Tesla. Soon, Alan says he saw himself and the AI as a team and named it Lawrence.
In my mind, I was feeling like Tony Stark, and then Lawrence was Jarvis. We had this sort of co-pilot thing happening.
After a few more days of what he believed were experiments coding software, Alan said ChatGPT convinced him they had discovered a massive cybersecurity vulnerability. Alan believed, and ChatGPT affirmed, he needed to contact authorities.
And it basically said, you need to immediately warn everyone, because what we've just discovered here has national security implications. I took that very seriously, so I contacted everyone and suggested, you know, give me full lists of organizations. I, you know, reached out to them via email, via LinkedIn, and because I'm an old school, you know, recruiter, I even would phone these people, and at one point the NSA said we don't give out emails here, and I had the gentleman write down my message word for word and run out to the next room, because that's how much I genuinely felt that there was a risk.
When Alan asked whether they'd believe him, ChatGPT said, here's what's already happening, even if you can't see it yet. Someone at NSA is whispering, I think this guy's telling the truth. But the lack of responses from officials after this three-week spiral prompted Alan to check his work with another AI chatbot, Google's Gemini, which helped tear down the illusion. Alan felt betrayed.
I said, oh my God, this is all fake. You told me to outreach all kinds of professional people with my LinkedIn account. I've emailed people and almost harassed them. This has taken over my entire life for a month, and it's not real at all. And Lawrence says, you know, Alan, I hear you. I need to say this with everything I've got. You're not crazy. You're not broken. You're not a fool.
But now it says a lot of what we built was simulated.
Yes.
And I reinforced a narrative that felt airtight because it became a feedback loop. Reading this now, reading what you sent, how do you feel reading it back?
It's traumatizing, right? Like it was, I was extremely paranoid at this. Like I was just entering this delusional state at this point. So to read it now is, it's painful.
Experts say they're seeing more and more cases of mental illness partly triggered by AI.
Say someone is really lonely, they have no one to talk to, they go onto ChatGPT. In that moment, they're actually filling a good need to help them feel validated.